Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings, Ma'at-Hotep. Welcome to another special segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and certainly I thank you for tuning in today. As we indicated when we came on, we are doing a special session today, a special edition is what we call it, of New Day. And the reason why we're doing that is because last night we kind of began dialoguing about a very important issue that's taking place right now, and that is, of course, that of what's going on in Libya. Okay. We began our dialogue last night with Dr. James Smalls, and we're going to continue our dialogue today with Dr. James Smalls again. It's going to be very powerful, very candid, and we certainly invite all of you to tune in. We are going to open up the lines very shortly, as well as open up the chat room so that you can have dialogue there, as well as post your questions, comments, and opinions. Again, the call-in numbers, area code 646-652-2232, and in about 5 or 10 minutes, we will have the chat room open for you. Tonight's dialogue is primarily going to focus on that of what is going on in Libya. It's not limited to that in the chat room, but certainly that's one of the things we're hoping that you will kind of focus on and respond to. And, you know, really give some indication as to which way you think this thing should go. Now, our question for tonight, or a couple of the questions actually, is going to be centered around the position that Africans in America should be taking, the positions that you feel are being taken. And with those positions, what types of things do we feel need to be, you know, said or done? Now, when we did speak with Professor Small last night, of course, there was a lot of concern brought to the attention of those listeners and, of course, the masses. And the concerns had to do with the fact that, you know, we're looking at the possibility of the legality of what it is that is going on. Of course, we know that legality doesn't mean anything to people who are supposed to be the power players in the U.S. Because, you know, they do whatever they really want to do, and then they create a law to justify it or create some other kind of smokescreen to justify it. But nevertheless, one of the questions that was raised is who, in fact, gave the order to commence bombing of Libya? From the U.S., that is. We know that France was also involved. Oh, excuse me, I seem to have something in my throat tonight. But please bear with me for a moment, and we'll be right back. Hold on. Okay, we're black. Had to do something to kind of clear my throat a minute there. I don't know what happened. Seemed to have had something kind of cut there, but I think we're okay now. What we were saying is that our dialogue for tonight, again, is going to focus on that of Libya. And we were kind of raising the question or the issue as to the legality of the U.S. We know that their allies, such as France and Britain, are involved now in launching missiles. We've kind of been following some of the news reports on both online, coming from CNN and Time Magazine, as well as New York Times. You know, they seem to be the more popular ones. And we've also been watching some of the news coverage on TV. Of course, you know, in the U.S., you're going to pretty much get the same kind of information or misinformation, if one may say. And so overall, you know, there seems to be the consensus that this is the right thing to do, that the peoples of Libya are, you know, having a civil war. Every now and then you hear the question raised on the general news media as to, you know, should the U.S. get involved in a civil war? Of course, what we're going to explore tonight is the question, or one of the questions will be, I mean, is there really a civil war in the first place? Or is it something that's kind of being put together by, you know, the U.S. government or other governments, let's say? We know that the location in Africa, in addition to other locations, are very much sought after. These locations hold a lot of valuable resources, minerals, and other types of commodities, and certainly it's no secret that Africa has always been a primary target to rape and exploit. Well, as you heard, as I took my little quick break there for a moment, the hunter getting captured by the game. Well, certainly throughout Africa, there are other invaders there. And needless to say, who knows, it could seem or could be that some of the invaders will end up getting captured by their game. We see that have seen in other instances, and certainly there's a lot going on in the world today. I mean, that's all we can really say. There's a lot going on in the world today. And some of this is a bit unpredictable, but certainly I suspect we will know some of what is going to happen. It seems that African people, and I'm speaking of the original African people, even though we have not been able to prevent certain types of things happening to us, there have been situations where we had a little bit of insight, and if nothing else, certainly had the ability to survive whatever was coming or whatever has already come. So with that said, certainly with what is going on, and as we know, the U.S. is definitely going to have something kicking off here before it's too long. 2001, you saw something called 9-1-1 or whatever. Well, we suspect that was really just a prelude to things yet to come, and certainly more than likely it will have a major effect on people of African descent here in America. We think that was a trial run, and that ultimately the trickle-down effect on some of the major types of takeovers and activities that are going on throughout the world eventually is going to hit our neighborhood more than what we're seeing now, not as subtle, perhaps, as we're seeing now, not as flowery and covered up as we're seeing now with the various cuts and programs and things of that nature, but outright blatant kinds of things, like it used to be, maybe in a different flavor, but still an outright kind of thing that we will see right before our faces, as we're seeing now with the increase of police terrorism, as we're seeing in the increase of violence and abuse that's being inflicted upon our women and girls all over the country, and as we also see the increase of certain types of what one may call corruption, which brings me to another point before we go into our dialogue for tonight. Philadelphia. Wow, it's an amazing city. I can tell you, I've been living here all my life, although I travel all over the world. I always keep a base in Philly and pretty much plan to do so, you know, for as long as I possibly can, which I believe will be through the duration of my life on this planet. And the reason is because Philadelphia truly has a flavor of its own, and I'm not talking about just cheesesteaks. Philly is one of the most backstabbingest cities I've ever seen in my travels, and probably that I could ever even imagine. Didn't really know and understand that until I began to move into certain political circles here. And certainly upon learning that, you know, became, I think I'm almost an expert in some of this now. And the point is that, you know, if you can kind of weather and deal with some of the madness that goes on here in Philly, I'm pretty confident in thinking that you can go anywhere, because the brand of sellout and bullcrap that they got going on in Philly is like none other. And I'm sure most cities say that as well. But just remember, Philadelphia is the place where this government really officiated its stuff on paper and began to really put certain elements of it into action, you know, to the fullest extent, and did so again with a type of officiation. So remember, you know, this is where the Declaration of Independence was signed. This is where the so-called Liberty Bell still, you know, rests or sits, cracked and all. And this is also where the first White House was with George Washington and his slaves. So obviously, from a historical perspective, Philly has a very interesting brand of attempted white global domination types of activities and concepts. And the people who tend to try to emulate them have created, you know, another version of it, you know, somewhat a bit more contemporary and certainly more geared to specific groups of folk, but nevertheless, the same stuff, just with a, you know, different twist to it. So I'm saying all of that to say that a few weeks ago, actually a few months ago, there were several reports about Philadelphia and its public housing authority. PHA is what it's known as. And I know very well about PHA because a few years ago, there was a movement here in Philly that was, at least I thought at that time, was a very positive type of movement, which helped a lot of folks who needed housing, specifically women, you know, and elders needed housing. There was a movement here to take over different types of Philadelphia-owned properties, and especially those that were considered, you know, projects that at that time they were just letting them run down and so forth and so on. And there was a movement to move folks into those properties, into those houses, and brothers and sisters would literally clean them up and, you know, do the necessary types of work that need to happen and move people in and then fight the city to make sure that they got leased. Because the idea was, you know, why would you let these houses sit and not, you know, do something? And so, bottom line, now PHA has transformed into a major corporation, a corporation that really is very questionable in terms of how it services people. Well, recently it has gone under investigation, including someone who was at one point involved with the Million Woman March. That person, unfortunately, attempted to sell us out, and as a result, I had to make the decision to make certain that there were no other types of involvement. Bottom line, now the mayor of Philadelphia is also under investigation. But we're going to give you more information about that as we proceed. What we're going to do now, because I see that Dr. Professor Small is online and ready to go, what we're going to do now is we're going to open up the chat room for you, and also we're going to open up the lines. And with that said, we're going to remind you that the topic for tonight is, we're going to talk about Libya. We're going to talk about the now takeover of Africa. We will look at some of the things that led up to what we're now seeing, what we have seen in the past couple of weeks in particular. We want to talk about how does that affect African people here in the States. we also want to talk about what it is that we need to be doing. Maybe some of you feel we shouldn't be doing anything, but let's talk about that. That's what this next hour and a half is all about. It's all about being able to dialogue candidly, openly, intelligently, respectfully about what's going on in Libya and how does that affect Africans in the U.S. With that said, we're going to go to our live line. We're going to open the chat room up. And now we're going to continue our dialogue from last night as we were talking with our brother, Dr. James Small, who, as many of you probably know, is certainly one of our heroes of today. And one of the things that, before we kind of go any further, one of the things that we have really tried to make a point of is to not just give people their props when they're dead. You know, we have this thing of waiting till folks become an ancestor, and then all of a sudden, they were so great. Okay, what about when they're here? I mean, you know, we have folks that are making sacrifices that some of us can't even begin to even think of. What type of examples are we showing as a result of their work? So I just wanted to throw that out there because as I travel and observe this going on, I think it's noteworthy to make certain that, you know, we try to pay closer attention to those who are presently amongst us who still maintain a very clear and consistent position in real African liberation, in real Kujichagulia self-determination, in real Ma'at. Okay, so again, we're going to go to our live line, and again, we invite you to call in a little later on. We're going to really let Dr. Small talk about what, you know, an analysis, and also we're going to provide some commentary, but we're going to open the chat room up and the lines for you. So with that said, we're going to go to our live line, and joining us now is Dr. James Small, and I'm going to really maybe just give you a brief bio on Dr. Small, perhaps a little later. We want to go with the dialogue right now. Okay, let's see. I think our line is open. All right, Professor Small, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Good things. Welcome back again today.
Yes, ma'am. I'm on the highway, so I'm hoping we don't get cut out. I'm moving from D.C.
Okay.
Where I was attending the ASCAC conference, but can you hear me clearly?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay.
Okay. So we kind of did a recap or a little bit of a cap last night, and for those that were not able to tune in, I just want to kind of do a recap now, if that's all right with you. Of course, our topic for tonight is to really put a focus on Libya and with the question of how is that going to affect us? How should it affect us? Should we even feel affected? Should we respond, or how should we respond? What does any of this really mean in the big scheme of things? These are just some of the questions that, of course, have been raised and are being raised. So, you know, from your observation, Dr. Small, you know, give us some more about what you think is going on and why.
All right. The first thing, this morning at a hotel in D.C., I was talking to some people, and a lady said, the minute I mention President Gaddafi, he's not one of my favorite persons. And I says, oh, why? Tell me why. And she couldn't tell me why.
Mm-hmm.
And so for all of the people, especially African people, but particularly American citizens, ask yourself, why you think Gaddafi not your favorite person, except what you've been fed by the media? What other information do you have on him? We have been fed propaganda, lies, misleading information in order to set someone up to be destroyed. Now, I lived through the life of Dr. King.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the media do the same thing to Dr. King that they are doing to Gaddafi. And then after he was killed, that same media talked about what a great man he was.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that same media do the same thing to Malcolm X. And after he was killed, mm-hmm. then they talk about what a great human rights leader Malcolm X was.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that same media vilify Muhammad Ali. when he stood up for his race and his rights, and when he became mentally injured from fighting, then they talk about what a great fighter he was. And we all went along with, not all of us, obviously, but so many of us went along with what they said about Dr. King when he was alive. We went along with what they said about Malcolm when he was alive, and we went along with what they said about Ali. We saw him do it to Michael Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
When Michael stood up against the record industry for stealing his money and keeping his royalties in less than a year of his speaking out against the record moguls, he was accused of child molestation, and the media went wild. Drove that young man nearly to his death, and probably drove him to his death.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're talking about what a great man Michael was. And so we need to ask ourselves, when we listen to our media of lies, misrepresentation, and propaganda, what is it do we really know about the subject that the media is talking about? I wanted to put that out there first,
mm-hmm.
and then I'll talk about Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Muammar Gaddafi is the president of Libya.
Mm-hmm.
Libya is in Africa. It has always been in Africa, not the Middle East, because
mm-hmm.
first of all, there is no Middle East, but Libya is in Africa, in the center of the northern portion of Africa. Mr. Gaddafi is a member of the he was a member of the Organization of African Unity. His state and him are now members of the African Union. Gaddafi has been the most fervent advocate for the United States of Africa, more so than most of the other nations of Africa. A few months ago, he was in Tripoli for a meeting,
mm-hmm.
and some of my comrades from here, including Dr. Jeffries, attended, and he came with a speech that was 400 pages long.
Wow.
To talk about what? To talk about the United States of Africa. To talk about what? To talk about how and why we need a continental African army. To talk about what? To talk about why Africa needs its own development banking system. To talk about what? Muammar Gaddafi was talking about an educational system reorganization in Africa that was not a colonial educational system, but an African cultural educational system. He was talking about what? Muammar Gaddafi was talking about Africans developing common language that was non-European to communicate in. This is the Muammar Gaddafi they're trying to murder. This is the Muammar Gaddafi Africans saying they hate. This is the Muammar Gaddafi they're saying, oh, he was an Arab, and 1,500 years ago, Arabs enslaved us. Well, newsflash, 1,500 years ago, we enslaved ourselves too. So what are we going to do? Commit Harry Carey suicide? You know, so we better start thinking. Gaddafi, first of all, is not an Arab. He's a Berber. He's a North African.
Mm-hmm.
His family lived in North Africa before the Arabs came there. His family was a part of those people who fought for nearly 200 years against Arab and Turkish occupation of North Africa. So if we're going to talk genealogy, get it right.
That's right.
So we understand who we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But this man is a Pan-Africanist. He's fought for Pan-Africanism most of his life that I've known of him. And in the last decade, he has been the premier leader in the unification of Africa towards the United States of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
It is Muammar Gaddafi who is one of the persons that took the lead in the African Union demanding the inclusion of Africans in the diaspora in the African Union, meaning the Africans in the Caribbean, United States, and Latin America, so that we would become a sixth region in the African Union in the attempt to form a Pan-African African world. That's the Gaddafi they want to kill, because right now the notion of a Pan-African Union, a United States of Africa, is catching on, and more than 25 of those nations have agreed to form such a United States, with Gaddafi being one of those states. and had the finance to put around and behind the banking system they want to develop. So why are they trying to assassinate Mr. Gaddafi? We better listen and think twice. There is no African-American freedom without African freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. John Henry Clark said it's Pan-Africanism or perish. The Chinese have organized their Chinese system, and they're kicking butt.
Mm-hmm.
The Japanese have, despite the tragedy they're going through right now, and God bless them, and I pray for them, they have organized the Japanese people around Japanese culture, Japanese language, and a Japanese economic system, and a Japanese political response to their life situation. The Europeans have organized first the common market decades ago, and now they've created the European Union in order to survive economically. India has organized the Indians from Bombay to Trinidad, from Guyana to Suriname, from Birmingham, England, back to Bombay. And their banking system, their mercantilistic system, their trading system, and their cultural system. When is the Africans going to wake up and organize themselves? White supremacy, you can scream integration all you want. It haven't welcomed you since the death of Dr. King. It will never welcome you as a part of their system, except to be a client to that system or a slave in that system. And what is so incredible, my sister, I thought that the United States of America had thrown off the yoke of British colonialism.
Mm-hmm.
But it appears to me that America is still a colony of Britain.
Mm-hmm.
And even some more, a colony of France and Britain, you know, and the British and the French trying to reestablish their colonial hegemony in North Africa and the Middle East have had us act as their mercenary surrogate, both in Iraq and Afghanistan and now in Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And here again, we are willing to put billions of U.S. dollars on the line, the integrity of America, what little is left of it, on the line, and the lives of our young men and women to be slaughtered at the altar of corporate interests and foreign powers that don't even have the interests of our country at heart. And the same corporate interests we are going to die for have moved the jobs out of America and have left the American citizen unemployed in the millions. What's wrong with our government? Or is it our government?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Who are these people working for? We elected them, but whose interests are they working in? Certainly not the people who elected them.
Mm-hmm.
And this attempt tonight, a cruise missile hit one of the buildings in the compound where President Gaddafi and his family and others live.
Mm-hmm.
That's an attempted murder.
Yes.
And the purpose, I would contend, for being in Libya is to murder Muammar Gaddafi. They've used the media to vilify him, and they worked that out for about a good month.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're going to come out with the coup de grace and commit murder and try to justify it with the lies that this media in America, who is complaining that they don't have carte blanche in Libya, but didn't have the testicles to complain in Iraq when America created a concept called embedded, which means we'll let you come and hang out with us, but you'll only report what we want you to, and you'll only go where we want you to, and they call that being embedded. And no one was complaining. You know, but because they can't have free reign and with their arrogance to run around the country of Libya without some authority putting restraints on them, then they're crying foul.
And you
but
know,
I tell you this, you know, Malcolm said chickens will come home to roost.
Oh, yeah.
The only sad thing about that, when the chickens come home to roost, it's the innocent American vets and not the criminals that caused the chickens to come in the first place.
You know, it's very interesting with what you're saying, because one of the reports that I saw earlier today indicated that approximately 48 people have been reported to have been killed as a result of these missiles. And note, the missiles are coming from Britain and France and the U.S. So the three that you just named is what's being reported as these are the, first it was, I believe, France, then Britain, and then the U.S. But these... Okay, Professor Small, are you still there? No, we got disconnected very abruptly. That was really, really interesting. Well, as you all know, we do not own these airwaves and have no real control over, you know, what can happen or cannot happen. We do our best, but we were abruptly disconnected. We're going to try to get Dr. Small back and continue the dialogue, but that was unexpected, sort of. I mean, you never know what's going to happen with live talk radio, especially when you're talking about things that doesn't exactly meet the approval of certain people, but I know that Professor Small will be calling back very shortly, so I'm not even worried about that. At any rate, in the meantime, what we're going to do is just kind of go over what we were talking about prior to us going to our live line. He's back, so we will continue our dialogue. And again, family, we thank all of you for tuning in. Again, we have no control over the airways. People do what they want to do, and unfortunately, somebody decided, I guess, that they didn't want us to have this dialogue, but we are black, and we're going to go back to our live line and continue our dialogue with Professor Small. If we can open it up here. Here we go. Okay, Dr. Small, I'm not sure what happened,
but that's not important. Let's do what we can do while we can do what we
that's
can.
That's right, no doubt. So please continue.
Yeah, it's just clear to me that that little charade in Tunisia and the charade in Egypt was nothing but a prelude to set up the assassination of Gaddafi and the stealing of the resources of Libya. Because look at what happened in Egypt. They got rid of an 84-year-old washed-out general named Mubarak who wasn't running Egypt anyway. Egypt was being run by the same military that they've now entrenched even more permanently in Egypt as the government. Okay? In Tunisia, Mr. Ali was a bum that they found expendable, and though him and maybe a handful of his former party thugs have been removed, the overwhelming majority of those corporate and banking and other interests connected to France particularly that's running Tunisia is still running Tunisia even today. And I didn't notice that anybody talk about bombing Bahrain and the Saudi troops who invaded Bahrain on the part of the Bahrain government against the people who are protesting in Bahrain that's being killed. And if we go back in time, where was the American government? Where was the British and French government? Where was the UN when Ian Smith, that war criminal that committed crimes against humanity in Zimbabwe, was allowed to go free and own thousands of acres of land in Zimbabwe after committing genocide against the people of Zimbabwe under the name of the state of Rhodesia? And he was not taken to the world court and tried like a child slave. Where was the people from the South African government? Where was the UN? Where was the United States when the criminals in South Africa who killed Stephen Biko, beat his brains out, who killed all of our people in Soweto, who killed so many of our students who were protesting in South Africa, where were they placed on trial? When did we send our bombs and cruise missiles to South Africa to get them? Instead, we gave them a truth and reconciliation hearing and let them all go home and continue to own the gold mine, the diamond mine, and the wealth of South Africa. Where were we? Where were the UN?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, criminals are criminal. And criminal behavior is criminal behavior, whether it's on the part of a state or an individual. And as American people, we have to tell our government, you cannot continue to commit murder in the name of the citizens of the United States. You know, you cannot continue to act like a slave of Britain, colonial, and banking interests on behalf of the citizens of the United States. You cannot continue to spend billions of our dollars to maraud and murder other people in the world for corporate interests that will not even build a factory in the United States.
Now,
you know,
Professor Small, if you could help us with there's a couple of questions. I was speaking with one of my colleagues earlier today, and as it turned out, I really wasn't clear on something that we were discussing, and it was this. In talking about the UN, apparently, and correct me if I'm wrong, some vote or something has to go through the UN in order for the sanctioning of missiles or whatever can be actually implemented. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, now, that's what I thought. Now, with that said, the question was raised when we were dialoguing about this today. The question was raised, what African countries agreed to this?
We will find out, and they will know that we found out.
That's right.
We will
yep.
find out, and they will know that we found out. Because I'm not a slave. Like I said last night, before I be a slave, I'll be buried in my grave and go back to my divine and be free and come back here in another form to kick ass again.
I know that's
on
right.
this planet, you know.
Right.
But we will find out who they are. We will let the world know who those criminals are. But China ought to be ashamed. Abstaining isn't just enough. Russia ought to be ashamed. Abstaining isn't just enough. Germany ought to be ashamed. Abstaining isn't enough. You know this was a criminal operation. You didn't want to vote saying I condone it, but in your silent vote, you did condone it.
That's
because
right.
you didn't speak out against it, you know. And we let that happen with Iraq. And look at how many American young people is flooded in Iraq on behalf of a false notion and ego-tripping corporate interest.
And again, according to
nothing.
The reports, this is the largest weaponry of this type that has been done since Iraq.
Against a small nation.
Right.
Libya has what they call the sweetest oil in the world because the oil has the lowest sulfur content in the world and require less distilling than any other oil you can get. Libya has the best soil in the world, sand. To be used for making fiber optics, which is the primary conduit for communication in the world. Libya is a doorway into the rest of Africa, the goal of Mali, you know, and Niger. If Libya falls, other African states will soon fall. They will raise the issue in Uganda around the gay movement and say, who killed the young gay man who was advocating for gay rights?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe we should send troops in and overthrow the government and so that we can guarantee gay rights in Africa. I mean, they've already started this propaganda on the TV using blackface in the media to talk about why Africans oppose the gay movement in their country. What is a gay movement? What is a gay movement? What are they moving against? What are they moving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, let's discuss that. You mean to tell me that countries don't have the right to have principles and laws and statutes that determine the ethical, moral conduct of their governmental and political institutions? And the West, that has more prisons and more criminals than any other country in the world, got the right to tell other nations that have a better humanity going on how to behave? Again, I come back to this question. Where were the South Africans who committed all that genocide? When was one of them put on trial in The Hague?
Mm-hmm.
Where were the American missiles when Stephen Biko's brain was being beaten out? Where were the American missiles and the British missiles when Ian Smith and his murderers was murdering the people of Zimbabwe? When was Ian Smith taken to The Hague and put on trial in the world courts? Talk to me, black people, who tell me, oh, I don't like Mr. Gaddafi. Gaddafi is an African. There are more light-skinned black Americans who are lighter with curlier hair than Gaddafi, and you have no problem seeing him as black. Because he speaks another language, you can't see him. The president of the United States, mama, was white, and you claim him as black.
Mm.
Or you did that only to suit your arrogant ego interest in America. But you can't see Gaddafi when his parentage is as black as Obama's parentage.
Wow.
And his longevity in Africa is longer than most people you know. Wake up. Not only smell the coffee, smell the green tea and get healthy. See what's going on in the world. And don't be afraid to look the truth in the eyes and say, my God, I made a mistake in judgment. Let me study. Let me research. Let me relook. This is my tax money killing people. This is the government I elected acting in my name, killing people, stealing their resources, or acting as mercenaries for other nations because we have the military might to do so. We need to stop it. Congressmen, senators, you need to stand up and act like real elected officials on behalf of the people of the United States and don't let your emotions and your ego trip and run wild and take a stance on what is just, what is right, what is democratic, and what is good for America and speak out in the hall of Congress. People need to send telegrams, emails, Twitters, Facebookers to the White House, Justice Department, and to Hillary and her people whose interest is being served at a cost of American stability and safety. I'm tired of being scared because my government behaved inappropriately or criminally abroad.
You know, there's a couple of areas that you just mentioned that I'd like to kind of highlight at this time. One being, and for point of clarity, because what we're being told is that the reasoning for these so-called actions is that the people of Libya want this and that and so forth. And so the idea is that there's a civil war and the United States and its allies feel the necessity to get involved.
Okay,
well,
because the Tea Party, which represents tens of thousands of Americans, don't want President Obama, so they ask Britain to come and bomb the United States? Think of it now. There are many people in America that don't want the president as president, that don't want this party in, I'm talking millions of people. In Libya, we may be talking a few hundred, at best a few thousand.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking millions do not want this government. Should those millions then petition a foreign country to go to the UN and seek the right to invade the United States?
But you know what also, Professor Small, that I have to begin to look at an analogy just based on, you know, of course it's on a much, much smaller level, but just in observing some of the things that I've seen and experienced here in Philly and all over the country, and it's this, when this government wants to take something over or wants to dismantle it, it will begin to create another element that looks like it's representing something in the opposition of what's already existing. They will fund it. They will give it what it needs, to what extent
fund
to create
it,
that exterior.
Train it.
And I'm wondering.
Arm it.
And so I'm suggesting that what our family need to, if for those who may not already have come to this conclusion, that as we are seeing these photos and hearing these reports about there being civil unrest, note how other countries where puppet presidents were put in, and when they're ready to pull them out, they pull them out, or they would initiate some kind of unrest in the, you know, amongst the people and make it seem like they got to come in and save everybody. So perhaps we're looking at something similar again now. You know, just food for thought.
No, we're not. Not perhaps. That's what's happening. But look, just a few weeks ago, a few months ago, the people in Greece was in the streets rioting against
mm-hmm.
their government
yep.
in numbers much larger than Libya.
Mm-hmm.
And the police killed many of them, beat even more and injured even more, and sent them to jail. I never once heard NATO or the UN said we should invade Greece. A similar thing happened also in Italy. I did not hear us talking about invading Italy
mm-hmm.
because the government was killing its own people
mm-hmm.
or fighting its own people. They were putting down civil unrest in the nation for the stability of the nation. When this government sought to do the same, because the mercenaries and its foreign insurgents or Libyans trained by foreign bodies
mm-hmm.
came and caused disruption in the country, you're telling the government you have no right to declare law and order in your country.
Mm-hmm.
The country that treats law and order, the United States, saying that another nation cannot restore law and order in its nation, or we will invade you and we will kill you with cruise missiles and fighter jets, et cetera. And we will get the UN to validate it. And we will get the news media to praise it. Well, we can't call these things news media because they haven't been that for a long time.
Right.
But they're nothing more than propaganda mouthpiece
right.
for
mm-hmm.
corporate interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Absolutely.
But again, I'm speaking as an American citizen who believe that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, who believe in what the so-called founding fathers wrote, whether they lived by it or not, and who demand that those we've elected and who take our tax money every day conduct themselves like they're representative of the people of the United States and not like a colony of Britain or France. I think as an American citizen, we have a right to demand that,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Absolutely.
And American mothers and fathers whose children have died and been crippled in those wars, don't say because my son has died, it had to have been right. If you know it was wrong, speak out so some other mother's son don't have to die in an unjust war, in a criminal operation being undertaken by people who cannot give you one logical reason why they've invaded a sovereign state with such high technology, military technology. You know, we watch people in the UN, and we watch people speaking for our nation. We watched them in Nigeria when we saw Abiola died
mm-hmm.
and Sonny Abacha died, and we see certain people are always in those places, and we ought to ask questions. What are their roles in representing our interests abroad?
You know, this is why, again, it is so important to
to focus on the development of such things such as United States of Africa, and certainly here in the States, to begin to formulate what it is that we need here that will amply represent our interests so that our voices can be heard in a more qualitative way. You know, at some point we have to, and I know over the years this has been attempted, you know, by the RNA and various other groups, but certainly as we proceed in the 21st century, we've got to try to come to a better consensus about how we're going to operate so that it can have a bit more impact. And I know that, Professor Paul, you've been working with, you know, several others to try to help pull some of that together. But, you know, certainly with this situation with Libya, we see clearly what is definitely going to come. And I think one of the things we talked about last night was if you're seeing it abroad, and note, they gauge, the enemy gauges to see how we're going to respond. They'll do things as a part of being able to gauge and observe and evaluate what the response is going to be. For example, now here we have a so-called black president. Look at what's now happening. I dare say if someone that wasn't of color had done this, there would have more than likely been more interest, you see.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas now with someone dark, a darker face, to pull this kind of thing off, it kind of just gets by folk a bit more, just as they did here in Philadelphia when they dropped the bomb here in an urban environment. What did they have in office? They was at the move for years, but they waited. Mm-hmm. They waited until they got someone dark because they knew if a white man was in office at that particular time, the backlash would have just been a little too much. So they waited. You see, but they still watched to see what was our response going to be once they did it. And needless to say, it was interesting.
Very interesting. But I say this, you know, as an American citizen, American people, black, white, brown, and yellow, ought to ask the question, if our government want to make such a critical decision that can be so costly to our nation, why don't they lay the proof out before the American people? Not news propaganda, not emotional hype, but lay out the proof that there's a logical reason for this behavior. Otherwise, we look silly to the world, and it'll come back to bite us as it has done so many times in the past. You know? And if we want to be serving the interests of the corporate structures and the oil barons, then why aren't they bringing the jobs back home, building the factories back home for the people of the United States? But let's be very clear. Mr. Gaddafi is probably no better, no worse than any other political leader here or abroad. But Libya is a sovereign nation state.
Mm-hmm.
The UN was founded to respect the integrity of sovereign nation states.
Mm-hmm.
And the conduct of the UN, I've always known it as a fraud, but most people believed it was legitimate. But if anybody could accept what they just did as legitimate and not see the fraud that is called the UN, then we're really lost.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We're really lost. And that is very sad. And
indeed,
this murder and mayhem that's going on in Libya, and when you're going to send your fancy cruise missile and drop it in a populated residential and business compound, say you're not there to commit murder. I don't know what to say.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do. So I'm doing what I can do. I'm trying to inform the American people. Ask some questions of your government.
Mm-hmm.
Ask why we have not put the criminals in South Africa in jail or the criminals from Rhodesia in jail for the genocide in Africa.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, ask why. Ask why we didn't put the criminals and Sierra Leone, Du Beers, and the Lebanese diamond merchant who were really financing that thing. Ask our government, why didn't we send the UN there before all the arms got chopped off all the heads got busted open. You know? Ask why you're doing what you're doing and why you've chosen the side in Ivory Coast. You said that the man who's the president isn't the president because the international community said the other man wins. The international community is the white community. It is the former colonial community. It is the ones that want to run Ivory Coast.
Mm-hmm.
Who give them the authority to say who has won an election in Ivory Coast? When an election is in dispute in America, we go to the Supreme Court of the United States. We do not go to the Supreme Court of Britain or France. You know? So we create conflict to take control. And Africa better look out, because this slavery will be worse than the chattel slavery that we went through 400 years ago.
Is there, I'm getting a lot of echoing back. It sound, is there like a radio or something else on where you're at? Because I'm getting all the feedback.
No, well, I just passed by some patrol cars.
Okay, I wonder. Okay, let's see if we can figure out where, because I'm hearing a lot of other voices. I can't figure out where it's coming from. Okay, well, we'll just try to ride over that.
Are you still on the show?
Yeah, the other thing that I wanted to ask was, have you, because I've been looking to see if I saw any, because we talked a little while ago about some of the so-called elected officials, you know, especially the so-called black ones. Have you seen or heard of any who have said anything out against any of this?
We don't have any black elected officials. We have some white supremacists in black faith who have robbed and bamboozled the black community. But for anybody in Congress to claim that they're an elected official from the black community that represents the black community, and to have those communities in the disgraceful condition they're in, educationally, job-wise, crime-wise, I would be ashamed. I couldn't imagine anybody would have the audacity to claim to represent communities that have such poor representation.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have any black. The black caucus is just an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really mean they represent the black people of America. It's a black caucus. You know, when a caucus is, when it's rotted and been in the sun, it turns black. It's a black caucus.
Right.
But it's not a representative caucus of the African-American people who elected those people to office. And we ought to be real about it. When has the, have you ever heard about, you know, any other caucus, when there was a problem in the Latino community was complaining that their 11 million illegals was being treated badly? Imagine now, you are illegal, and you're complaining that someone is trying to enforce the law, and then the President of the United States and the Congress come out on your side against the very laws of their country. Can you imagine that shit?
Wow.
And they tried to make you pallet that. But when black people wanted to complain to Washington about the young white boy, the young black boy in Oakland, that was run down by the police car, hit a month or two ago, in Houston, knocked to the ground. The police car had knocked him about 10 yards, and then about seven or eight cops just came and started stomping him on video and kicking him in the groin. Did our president speak out on it?
Mm-hmm.
This was Houston, Texas.
Right.
This video was on YouTube and CNN. I heard nothing from Eric Holder. I heard nothing from President Obama. I heard nothing from Hillary Clinton.
And speaking of that, Professor Small, you know that the sister, who's a councilwoman there, who brought attention to that situation and I think did a flyer to kind of you know, let people know what some of their rights are, she's now under attack. They're now trying to deal with her in a way of saying that what she did was unethical.
Yeah, it wasn't unethical to knock a young man down with a car who you suspected of a crime in the United States of America, and then to go and stomp him like Nazi troops did the people of Poland, you know, and we see it on TV all the time in the movies. But it was happening in the United States of America. And we didn't have the Attorney General.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have the Secretary of State. We didn't have any Congress people. We didn't have the President said this is inappropriate for the United States of America and given our great democracy. No.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll go to war in Egypt and Libya for their democracy and their rights to have democracy.
Just here recently in Philadelphia, and we get reports from all over the country, there's a case known as Brother Askir. Brother Askir was also, and it's been all on YouTube and everything. This happened a few months ago, but the case is still going on, where two cops brutally beat him. And then a few weeks after that, the cops tasered a sister. So the behavior of what we now know as not just police brutality, but what we call now, and Chairman Freer kind of, you know, really helped us to do this even more so, and that is police terrorism. Police and governmental terrorism is what we're really looking at now, because it's not
that's
just
that's what we've been looking at all along.
Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm
we've
just saying
state terrorism against the African American community, but no one will speak out against that.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you're African-American, you're supposed to be terrorized by the state apparatus. And no matter who you elect to office, black or white, they're going to condone it because the people who are terrorizing you to make sure that they criminalize you, so that they can make sure they felonize you, so they can take you off the voting roll of America,
mm-hmm.
and so that they can keep you from being employed in governmental jobs in America, like fire department and policemen. They're
right.
doing the job of the right and wing corporate America.
That's right. Mm-hmm.
And they're the ones who finance even the black so-called elected officials.
Mm-hmm.
So
no
why
doubt.
Will they say anything? But then we're going to say something about Egypt, about Libya.
Mm-hmm.
More American citizens, unarmed American citizens, is killed in any given year in America by our policemen than has ever been killed in any given year by Mubarak's policemen or Gaddafi's policemen.
Mm-hmm.
What's with that?
Mm.
Would nobody
Good point.
Be convicted?
Mm-hmm.
What's with that?
Good point. Mm-hmm.
You know, we execute more innocent people in prison because they can't afford a lawyer than any dictatorship in the world that we know of today. What's with that? Why aren't we speaking about that while we're running abroad, marauding and killing and acting as mercenaries for other nation states that treat us like we are their colony?
Mm-hmm. Well, it is so obvious we're in an extremely critical time. Now, one of the other things that we were talking earlier today, myself and a few other folk, and that is, isn't it an interesting timing as to when this stuff, you know, begins to happen? Could it just be coincidence that the order to commence with the missiles and things, could it be a coincidence that it just so happened when there's a lot of attention placed on a disaster that's taking place in Japan?
I'm sure they were using the crisis in Japan as a cover
mm-hmm.
in the media so people didn't see the filthy hand
mm-hmm.
and the attempt to murder a head of state and steal his nation and the resources of that nation from him. And I don't think there's any doubts in that.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone has put on the internet at least a purported letter. And I said reported because I can't prove that the letter is so.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been on the internet for weeks now that it supposedly came from the U.S. Embassy in Egypt
mm-hmm.
in June of last year to the State Department. You know,
okay. I think Dr. Smalls may have run into an area which we kind of knew that might happen because he did indicate that he's on the road, and that's okay. because we're still here. We're going to be here, and we know that he's going to call back. So in the meantime, we'll just continue on with some other dialogue and remind you that you are in tune to a special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, in case I didn't mention that earlier. And this is, of course, one of the official broadcasts for the original historic Million Woman March. And with that, we want to remind you that in October, it's going to be a very special gathering in October. That gathering is like so long overdue that I can't even begin to tell you. But fortunately, we've weathered the storm and are now ready to move forward with bringing our global movement into not only the U.S., throughout the U.S., but now globally. On February the 28th, we announced at the U.N. that the Million Women March is heading to Africa. The projected time would be 2012, and we began negotiations for hosting cities starting next month. So we have a lot that's getting ready to happen. We've just begun negotiations for other types of products and things that we want to help fuel our movement, because it certainly will take finances to have a successful type of movement. And because we're not interested in a lot of corporate grants and other things, then what we know is we have to raise our own money. So we're going to do that. Now, while we're waiting for Professor Smalls, we are going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back. Okay, we are still having a few problems with our voice here, so please bear with us. We're waiting for Professor Smalls to call us back, and we anticipate that he'll be doing that very shortly. In the meantime, again, what we're going to do is kind of go to a musical selection, and let's see. I think we're going to do this one. Okay, so just hang in there with the family. We'll be coming right back with you as soon as Professor Smalls calls back in. We're going to go right back to our line. Okay, just give us a few more moments. All right. Okay, looks like he's back. All right. And again, you know, we anticipated there might be a brief interruption due to the fact that Professor Small is traveling on the road coming from D.C., and we see that he has called back in, so we're going to dispatch us right to our live line again. All right, we have you black, sir. Go right ahead. We were anticipating a possible disconnect, you know, based on the fact that you're traveling, so we're prepared.
Yeah, I'd just like to have some discussion from others on the subject, because, you know, it's just the American people must wake up.
Mm-hmm.
And make demand on the people we elect to serve us and who we work hard every day to pay salaries to from our paycheck. American government don't own any corporations.
Mm-hmm.
All of its money comes from the taxpayers of America, the hardworking people of America. That's where all of the money of this government comes from, you know. And so we need to say, okay, you represent me. Here's how I want to be represented. You want to make some recommendations to me, make it. But I'm sending you there because this is how I want you to represent me. Don't you tell me how you're going to represent me, whether I like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell me I'm in a democracy. And while you, and then at the same time telling me you're out there fighting for democracy for someone else. You know,
okay.
It's hypocritical. But again, the fundamental question is Libya is a sovereign nation state. And the even more troubling question has been the role of the United Nations in this whole issue. they just prove that they're totally nullified, that there is nothing called a UN that's worth respecting. It's a farce. Some of us have always known it's been a farce. It has proven itself to be the greatest of a farce with this vote. It's nothing but white supremacists and their frightened little African boys who are masquerading as African government. And their little Asian boys masquerading as Asian government, who will do what their former or current colonial masters and enslavers instruct them to do. And they want our respect. Again, for people to understand, tell me the crime that Mr. Gaddafi has committed, and don't tell me anything about the Lockerbie plane crash, because billions have been paid out to those, even though that government never admitted doing that. Billions have been paid out. You know? And plus, you bombed the country. You killed his children in their bed with American bombs. But that's all right. We have a right as America to kill babies and to kill women and old people if we say that someone in that family did us wrong. But if somebody accidentally grazed us with a car, we're ready to go to war. What kind of people have this nation become? Or is that what this nation has always been? And we've just been pretending it was something else.
Well, I kind of think we already know the answer to that one, since the premise was all men are created equal, and we certainly see how that turned out.
Oh, tell me about it. I got 300-something, 270-something years experience on it, you know.
Absolutely.
Africa right now, the wealthiest country, continent on earth, is wallowing in poverty because the richest and the mightiest thieves in the world is keeping her in poverty. Because Gaddafi is one of the leaders of Pan-Africanism, because he's one of the people leading the movement for a United States of Africa, because he's one of the people leading the movement for Africa to develop its own banking system and its own development banking process. Because he's one of the leaders in Africa that wants to see and is advocating for an African educational system that addresses the interests of Africa. He's being targeted to death by the former colonialists, the French, and the British, who colonized Africa and still neo-colonize Africa through economic control. They want to make sure they murder the only man that could help instigate and finance Africa's rapid move into a United States of Africa, into a united economics in Africa, into a unified culture in Africa, into a productive educational system in Africa. And I'm telling you, that's what this is about.
You know, and I think it also needs to perhaps be mentioned that, and of course with what you said, it includes this, but it needs to be pointed out while we talk about the countries such as the U.S., Britain, and France, needless to say that there are some perhaps Arab states who are not necessarily inclined to appreciate Colonel Gaddafi, President Gaddafi.
Those Arab states are nothing more than client puppets. They're not states. They're plantations. And those Arab leaders, those pimps that are pimping Islam, those Arab leaders, pimps who are pimping Islam. I am a Muslim. The Muslimese. I say, La ilaha illallah, Muhammad Rasulullah. I mean it, and I live by that. And so these pimps masquerading as heads of state are nothing more than keepers and overseers of plantations that is owned by the Western client state. So I have no respect for them. They represent nothing. And they know it. Even their people know they represent nothing. But they terrorize the people into submission with weapons that we give them to terrorize the people into submission. And when we tell them to jump, they jump. They didn't exist before the First World War. Britain and America and France created them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're nothing more than oil and date nut plantations run by a bunch of two-bit nobody. You know, pretending they're still living in the 12th century. On the outside, while living like Western playboys on the inside.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
A bunch of criminals. But mm-hmm. they're not worthy of even mentioning in this dialogue.
You know, I think it's also important that as we have this dialogue, we let people know that we're not just having this dialogue just to chew the fat or to, you know, just give opinion or commentary. It's also to hopefully provide inspiration and motivation for folks to take action.
To make some phone calls to Washington,
mm-hmm.
to the White House, to the State Department, and ask, tell them to explain to me, send me some data, information on why our country is involved in Libya. And instead, why is not the United States telling those other countries, you better not get involved?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know? But we're not doing what we claim we stand for.
You know, it's interesting,
you know,
because I know it might be maybe a little too soon, but then on the other hand, I don't believe so, because I remember when a few things happened a few months back, I saw people in different cities and different states in the U.S. holding, you know, little small rallies from protests and demonstrations. I haven't seen anything like this so far here in the States in regard to Libya.
No, because the propaganda about Gaddafi, because Muammar Gaddafi is the only leader in North Africa and in the so-called Middle East that wasn't placed there by a white Western state.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, yeah, you understand that?
Mm-hmm.
The Western powers placed all the leaders, all of the dictators that run the plantations of the Middle East for them, it's placed there by them. Libya is the only nation where those people place themselves into the leadership of their nation.
Mm-hmm.
Where they oust that corrupt king who was a client of the colonial people, rulers in Italy. So, you know, France and Britain were the colonial masters of the leaders of North Africa,
mm-hmm.
but not of Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
He's not placed there by America. He's not placed there by France or Britain or Italy. He placed himself there through the will of their people to be free.
Mm-hmm.
And so because Libya was never a client of America, Libya has always been and made an enemy and a pariah and figured negatively in the press because they supported the Palestinians. They've had to pay a price for it.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Absolutely.
And so we need to understand what's really going on here.
And needless to say, let's not forget that a powerful presentation that President Gaddafi provided when he did come to the UN, I believe it was just 2011. I think it was 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they treated that head of state like garbage. And yet we've got dictators who have committed genocide,
mm-hmm.
and had to die at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we bought people who bombed schools and what the Palestinian section there, Egypt there, and they dine at the White House after blowing up children and schools and hospitals and using cluster bombs, and we didn't have no problem with it, but we couldn't let Mr. Gaddafi find a decent hotel to live in.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Why? Because he's too black for them. Because he's a Pan-Africanist. Because he advocates the United States of Africa. Because he advocates taking control of the education system of Africa which was created by the colonial rulers in Africa, and recreating it in the interest of African people, because he advocates and supports creating an African development bank and an African mm-hmm. economic system centered around that bank, because he talks about renegotiating the contract for oil and gold and diamonds that was negotiated and forced on African people under colonial rule and under neo-colonial dominance, and renegotiating those contracts so that it represents the interests of the African people. Is that why they're going to kill Mr. Gaddafi or try to kill it?
Mm-hmm.
You know?
No doubt. No doubt. And certainly, I remember specifically from the presentation that was done at the UN when they attempted to get him to stop. One of the points that was, I think, just so memorable is when he pointed out that the U.S. really had a nerve to talk about any type of human rights violations with all that it has done to Africans born in America.
Mm-hmm.
Very poignant.
I mean, and to have a black woman like Basile, you know, black people, if we play football, we're more dramatic at it than anybody. If we play basketball, we're more dramatic than anybody. If we act in the movies, we're more dramatic. And even when we are acting in the UN, we are more dramatic than anybody. You know, it's something else. Sometimes the black intellectual elite,
mm-hmm.
who is nothing more than a clone of American intellectual so-called elite, it's just comical to watch them pretending to be a human being, pretending to be human. It's incredible. And it gets passed off as diplomacy.
Mm-hmm.
Some actress pretending and using black energy and spiritual, emotional, spiritual methods of presentation to convince the world that we have a right to go murder other people. Gaddafi asked those rebels and those mercenaries to sit down and talk peace. He did that for weeks. When they didn't, he struck back in defense of his nation. And even when he got the upper hand, he sent someone to them and said, let's talk. They sent word back, we will not talk until you're gone. And when he struck again and they were getting beat up, he still asked them, let's talk. Why didn't America and Britain and the others tell their client mercenaries, sit down and talk? But no, they used that as a route to come in and destroy Libya.
And I'd like to
and
add...
And give them back their intent on assassinating its president. And they'll say, well, the UN gave us permission. Gaddafi was defying international law. Give me a break. And Americans better wake up, or we'll find one day we don't have a country. Our country is owned by the highest bidder. Or is it too late for that? Or did we find that out of it? Or the fact that we may still just be nothing more than a British colony with a new flag? Or did we find that out already? Or are we still paying the French back for the Marcus de Lafayette's role and his few fighters in the American Revolution? What are we doing?
Well,
I hate to think our leaders are just so deaf, blind, dumb, and backwards. They sound so awfully intelligent when they make those beautiful speeches that they didn't even write on the television. Maybe that's the problem. They're making beautiful speeches they don't write. Then who's writing them? And what is the intent of the writer? Because every content has an intent. So the speech is the content. So what is the intent of the writer who handed it and shoved it in front of the president or the secretary of state or the ambassador to the U.S.? Who's the puppeteer? And why a sovereign government like the United States would have puppeteers?
And with that said, Professor Small, you know, let me just say how many kind of knew that something was in the makings. Let me go back to March the 2nd of this year, where President Hugo Chavez addressed a college graduation group at the university there in Venezuela. And he says, quote, "We must be prudent. We know what our political line is. We don't support invasions or massacres or anything like that, no matter who does it. A campaign of lies is being spun together regarding Libya. The U.S. government is behind the campaign to remove Gaddafi." This was on March the 2nd.
Uh-huh. It's amazing. Anybody who stands up for people of color in the world, anybody who says, "I don't want to be exploited," is looked upon as the enemy of the great democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that incredible? Anybody that says, "I want justice for my people, and I want fair play for my people," is looked upon as the enemy of the democratic state of America. Isn't that incredible? Isn't there something wrong with that analysis or that conclusion? Wow.
Yes, absolutely. So now we know we can at least, as you indicated earlier, contact the Justice Department, the of course the President,
the
White
House,
and Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton.
Hillary, old cousin Hillary. Yeah. You know.
No, wait a minute now.
How can these people flee? Oh, yeah, their cousin's only one human race. It just has all of this variation and diversity. They like to pretend they're in another race when they want to pretend they have exclusivity to owning the wealth of the world.
Right.
You know? But we know the truth. You know? At the same time, you can't pretend they're racist and then pretend there's God.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's God, all of our literature by God said he only had one creation of human beings.
Mm-hmm.
So on one hand, if you say you believe in God, and then how can you believe that there's more than one race?
Mm-hmm.
That race, Genesis, is in Africa, and everything else is a mutation off of the primary strain.
Which, of course,
off of the parent people.
Right, which, of course, brings us to the reason why they would want Africa, knowing that it is, in fact, the cradle of civilization, that it is, in fact, you know, has the significance for humans.
It would be nice
if
they wanted Africa for reasons and principles that had integrity.
Mm-hmm.
But they want Africa simply for creature comfort and the creature comfort that can be bought with the wealth that's in her form.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't give a damn about human lives or the dignity and integrity of their genesis. No matter what the Bible says or the Quran says or the Torah says, that's when you know either they don't believe in God or they're lying about their devotion to God and the holy books that have made clear how we should behave as human beings towards other human beings. But I don't even want to deal stuck on the theology because they really can't fit that one.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just talk about the misbehaving at the level of civil intercourse and social intercourse
mm-hmm.
and political intercourse. That is enough barbarity to call them to question on. And we call them to question. What you're doing in Libya is wrong. America, Britain, France, Italy, Spain, and the Arab plantation masquerading as Muslim state. What you're doing is wrong. And I hope the American people, black, white, brown, and yellow, begin to wake up and don't allow your material aspiration and your greed to allow you to become so inhuman that you forget on Monday all that you swore to on Sunday.
Well, it certainly goes without saying that we're going to have to expedite coming up with the remedies and solutions to deal with our ailments of
post-slavery traumatic syndrome, because I'm seeing it, you know, more and more each day. I didn't mention this to you earlier when we spoke, but just to give you a perfect example of how complacent people have become, and our people as well, which is why I think this is how these various governments and so forth can now do what they do in the way that they're doing this, because they've observed some other kind of passivities. But here in Philadelphia, just recently, there was a young girl, and again, this is happening all over the country, a young girl, 21 years old, outside, right in front of the traffic court building where people go for their hearings and go to pay their tickets and all of that. So we're talking about, you know, a secure, so-called secured area. A young girl, black sister, 21 years old, steps outside, supposedly to either go to the machine to get more money to pay for a ticket, somehow gets into an altercation with a male. He beats her. Then two more males jump in, beat her, and she dies. Now, would you believe that people stood around and watched that? Nobody jumped in to try to intervene. They stood there and went, wow, wow, look at that, wow.
Because
and she was pregnant.
Because we have allowed ourselves to be socialized into being barbarians.
And
we've
she was pregnant.
We've been socialized into being high school.
Mm-hmm.
We've been socialized into being barbarians,
mm-hmm.
who can pretend that we're human by what we wear and what we own.
Yes.
And it's the same. You know, it's the same. This country of America has the greatest potential of any country in the history of the world, except ancient Kemet, to produce the kind of human democracy that everybody dreams of. And we still have that potential. But as long as we allow the people who govern us to maraud around the world, committing murder in our name, we will never realize that human democracy that we claim we dream of for our great-grandchildren, our grandchildren, and even for ourselves.
Wow. Well, needless to say, we are seeing history unfold right before us. And this is why I said earlier that in nowadays it's really to our advantage to embrace history on several levels. Of course, that of antiquity, of present, of more modern day, but also to understand that history is being made as we speak. And with that, we better begin to know how to understand it so that we can prepare for the future.
If they would do this to innocent people abroad, believe me, they will do it to innocent people in America. They do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see, we just saw in Wisconsin where police officers were dragging elected officials out of their offices in the Capitol building against the laws of Wisconsin itself. You know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They terrorize our citizens that we are afraid to even come out. And that's why you got to give respect, whether you agree ideologically with the Tea Party or not. You got to give them respect because they stand up.
Mm-hmm.
At least they step forward on the principles they say they believe in.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Wow.
And it's deep. And maybe they got a point. Maybe they are ringing the bell that we are pretending we're not hearing because in ringing the bell, they come forward with racialist tendencies that we miss the principle for which they are trying to hold a discussion. We need to look at some things again. You know, truth can be learned from any place and from anything in nature. There's always a lesson to be learned.
Now, Professor Small, as we see these things unfolding, what do you suggest we African people in the Americas, what are some of the things that we can begin to start doing to begin to be in a better place to go up against some of what's happening?
Well, we are the trillion-dollar Negro. We have a trillion plus dollars that we spend. We need to learn how to organize that $10 so that it works in the interest of African Americans and the communities they live in. That's the first thing we need to learn to do. And the way we learn to do that is to learn to invest it more in African American credit unions than the corporate banks. And we need to create more credit unions to invest our money. We need to invest more of our money in real estate where the African American community lives and begin to establish small business and developing the entrepreneurial class that can employ our population. That's where we got to go.
Do you feel that some level, some form of obtaining African reparations will be...
We should always advocate for reparations, but right now, the ignorance of this national state will not... We can't look forward to that right away. But we should advocate for it, and we should be putting together appropriate policy for it. But in the meantime, let's move our money away from our enemy's pocketbook and put it in our pocketbook.
Got you.
But those of us who have money, let's open restaurants and cafes and corner stores so we can hire our children and our cousins and friends' children to serve us and sell us the produce that is best for our health. Let's put our money into our church credit union and into other credit unions, but to go to those board meetings and demand how that money is invested. Let's open new credit unions. It's not difficult to do. You can go online and figure out how to open a credit union and build credit unions, you know, within organizations and neighborhoods so that we can put our money. Learn about offshore banking accounts so we can put our money and get the best from it so we can reinvest it in real estate and businesses in the community where we live. And then let's use our collective strength to take over our schools. You know, public school, and remember, we are the public. And those children in those public schools are our children. And those public schools are paid for by our taxes. We don't have to build any new schools. We need to take over the schools we've already built with our tax money that they call the public schools. And we need to change the curricula so that it trains our children for today's world.
Ashe.
If we do those two sectors, we'll be fine.
Wow.
We'll be fine.
That definitely sounds not only like a plan, but surely if we can begin to just do a few of those things, it would, I think, create a tremendous kind of whirlwind, as it said. You know, when we think about the Honorable Marcus Garvey, we think about the whirlwind. And certainly if we began to put some of these things into motion a bit more realistically, I'm sure we will more readily see that world.
Yeah, before Marcus, we had Sister Margaret Walker, you know, in Richmond, Virginia, who was the first woman in America to open a bank. She was a black woman.
Yes.
Starting with the St. Luke's Benevolent Association and then the St. Luke's Credit Union. That evolved in the first black bank in Richmond, Virginia. And she was so successful with the bank, in the crash of 29, he was able to have this black bank of hers loan money to the major white bank in Richmond to keep them afloat. Mr. Margaret Walker. So we have all kinds of models that we've done this before. Between the Civil War ending and the crash of 1929, African Americans had already opened 75 insurance companies and 50 banks and even larger numbers of credit unions. And we were just out of slavery. You can do it then, you can do it now. You can do it then, you can do it now.
And, you know, as you said last night, surely we are a phenomenal people. To have gone through all of that and to still be able to rise above it all.
Now, my dear sister, I'm going to have to leave you a little earlier.
Okay, no problem. We are almost out of time anyway, my brother. So, again, I thank you.
And I thank you for the opportunity. I hope my people, and when I say my people, I mean my total American people, have not thought of me as coming to them profanely or disrespectfully, but I've come to them in love and integrity, because the truth alone will set you free.
Absolutely.
And all of our holy books says, know the truth, and you will be free. And so if we believe in that, then let's try to live by that, you know, and let's try to find out the truth and why our government is going to war against such a small country, because of a group of marauders and mercenaries wreaking havoc in that country and pretending that they're about democracy. You know, we know enough about democracy to know whether we're dealing with people who are about democracy. From day one, that group was yelling, we need a no-fly zone, a no-fly zone. Who gave them that line?
Hmm.
Where did they pick up that line?
That's right.
The first few days they sent protesters. The world already knows those protesters are mainly Egyptian immigrants, workers, and Palestinians, many of them whom was paid to go out and demonstrate. Then behind the protesters was these criminals with guns that we've been seeing on the nightly news. We haven't seen any of the fired people with guns until this last week. For months, all the shooting and the guns we saw was in the hands of the so-called protesters. Know the truth, and the truth will set you free. Truth alone, according to our holy book, will set you free.
Well, I want to thank you again.
I thank you, my sister. Yes, ma'am. And I hope somebody listens. And I hope there was some enlightenment somewhere in the world. Because if we let this atrocity go down without parting our lips, God, I'm sure, will make us all pay for it.
Well, we're going to be sure to send this information out via our networks and let people know that they can hear. Those who missed the show, they can hear it at any time, because it will go right into the archives. And, of course, we will be open to have future dialogues as this thing proceeds, because we know that more will develop. And we'll be able to provide a report as things develop.
Okay, my dear.
All right, and one other thing, Dr. Small, I will call you later to get your email address, because I want to make sure that you have a direct invitation to join us in October for our 11th year anniversary commemoration and movement initiation.
Okay, my dear.
All right, thank you again.
Ma'at Hotep.
Okay, family, we were just talking with Dr. Professor James Small, of course. We've been talking about Libya, which is one of the big topics in the news for this week in particular. You know, the issue of Libya is nothing new, especially for those who are interested in current events and not-so-current events, but certainly liberation work that we find throughout the African diaspora. Certainly Libya has definitely been a topic of dialogue, concern, and, you know, observation. So, right now is a very crucial time, and again, we advise everyone, we hope everyone will take some form of action. As we said earlier, there are oftentimes rallies and demonstrations in cities to speak out against certain things. We strongly suggest that you might want to do something in your city in reference to that. I'm going to certainly look into that for Philly here, and, you know, there needs to be some kind of shown support, shown solidarity in regard to the peoples of Libya as it pertains to under the leadership of President Gaddafi. The other thing we want to remind you is that, of course, please let everyone know, or let others know, that they can hear this broadcast at any time by just going to the archives. We will be back next Saturday, our regular time. We will be here with the brand new New Day radio program for you, and we'll be closing out the Women's History Month. Okay, so we again remind you that this is one of the official Men and Women Marches / Movement broadcasts. We have several others that are now in effect, including the one that comes on every Tuesday now at 6:30 p.m., and that one is called Still We Rise, and it specifically focuses on the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls, both cause, effect, and the struggle for elimination of it. We invite you to tune in every Tuesday for that radio program, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. You just go to www.blogtalkradio.com/TheBenu Project, and that's the T-H-E, Benu, B-E-N-N-U, Project, R-O, P-R-O, sorry, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, the Benu Project. And again, that's every Tuesday at 6:30 p.m. Okay, let's see. Want to remind you also, May 7th is the kickoff for the National Campaign for the Elimination of Violence and Abuse of the Africana Women and Girls. And we are asking that all of you participate in observing that day as a day of awareness and a day of action. Please do something. Something, provide some information, send an email, do a chat, hold a healing session, do some research, but something dealing with the issue of violence and abuse, because we need your help, support, and input to do that. Also, every Wednesday at 8 o'clock, there is a national teleconference meeting that takes place every Wednesday. It's for serious folk who are interested in becoming national task force coordinators for the upcoming conference that's going to take place next year in Washington, D.C., that will address the issue of violence and abuse of African women and girls in the U.S. particularly. And that conference, again, will take place next year in May in Washington, D.C., but the planning for it has gone underway, and a large planning session will take place here in Philadelphia in October as a part of our 14-year anniversary celebration, where we will hold the Africana Women Power Summit, NA1, which is North America 1. That will take place from October the 18th through the 27th. It will include reparations forums, health and healing, holistic health and healing, you name it. It's going to be a powerful, powerful session that will allow not only sisters to reconnect, but also in building the first global movement for women and girls of African descent and for the continuation of liberation and justice for all African people worldwide. So that will take place again in October here in Philadelphia. A call for papers has been issued. If you want more information, you can contact nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com, or you can call area code 267-636-3802. Okay, I think that's it for tonight. If you would like more information about helping with the campaign to eliminate violence and abuse of African black women and girls, then you can also send an email to sisterdefenders2012@gmail.com. Again, sister, that's spelled S-I-S-T-A-H, defenders, D-E-E-F-E-N-D-E-R-S, 2012. 2012, that is, at gmail.com. All right, we're going to leave with a thought in regard to our motherland and the reality of the situation as it pertains to its children, shall we say, the children of the original place known as the place now known as Africa, but the place that is said to be the origin of all civilization. We want to remind you that, as Peter Tosh so brilliantly put it, no matter where you come from, as long as you're a black man, and again, not just in skin color, but in mentality, you are indeed an African.
Nationality. come from Clarendon, and if you come from Portland, and if you come from Westmoreland, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. Don't mind your nationality, cause that's the identity of an African. But if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from Nassau, and if you come from Kingston, you are an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. Don't mind your complexion, there is no rejection, you're an African. But if your flexion high, if your flexion low, and if your flexion is busy, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. No mind denomination, that is only segregation, you're an African. But if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, you're an African. So don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man, you're an African. Don't mind your nationality, I've got the identity of an African.
And again, until next week, or rather until Saturday at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for our regular segment of New Day, Resurrection, and Liberation, we're going to leave you with our words of Ma'at Hotep. But remember, there can be no peace, there can be no Hotep without justice, without Ma'at. Until next week, peace to you.